Welcome to another deep dive. Today, you know, we're really getting into the weeds of organizational design. We're talking about quality management systems, or QMS.
Yeah, and we've got a fantastic stack of source material for this one.
We really do. We're pulling from over 20 research papers currently sitting on Zenodo. These are preprints currently under journal review, plus the R5 specification and possibility paper and the organizational schema theory, or OST, mapping to ISO 9001.
It's a lot of dense material, but the implications are just massive.
Totally. And before we get into the breakdown, I want to set the stage for you. ISO 9001 has been telling organizations to document their processes since 1987. Most organizations have. The documents are in SharePoint. The processes are in people's heads. The gap between the two is the quality gap, and no amount of documentation has ever closed it.
I mean, that really just hits the nail on the head. We build these huge, you know, administrative monuments to quality, but they don't govern the actual work. They just govern the audits.
Right. So here's the roadmap. Four things today. Why continuous certification through CICD validated specifications beats the annual audit cycle. How OST's cascade structure maps directly to ISO 9001 clauses 8 and 9. The mathematical proof that you cannot write enough SOPs to cover every situation, and what this means for your QMS design, and how every quality gate traces backward to a customer perception target at L0.
We are talking about a complete paradigm shift here. Like moving away from quality as this bureaucratic exercise in a text document and moving toward quality as an executable machine-readable infrastructure.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start by looking at the baseline reality for you, the listener. If you work in any organization that maintains an ISO 9001 certification, you probably know the drill.
Oh, absolutely. The dreaded annual audit.
Exactly. It is akin to cramming for a massive final exam once a year. The internal audit is looming on the calendar and suddenly everyone is just scrambling. People are opening up Word documents on a shared drive that literally haven't been touched since the auditor left 12 months ago.
Yeah, you're in there fixing broken cross-references.
Yeah, right. Updating job titles, making sure the headers say revision 4 instead of revision 3. But between those annual audits, the actual system drifts. The real work evolves. Employees figure out, you know, necessary workarounds to actually get their jobs done. And the manual just sits there gathering digital dust.
And that drift, it's not because people are lazy. That drift is a structural problem with the medium itself. Document-based quality management systems are inherently fragile.
Fragile how? Like, just because they get outdated?
Well, think about the mechanics of how a traditional QMS operates. First, you have manual version control. If, say, procedure A references step 4 in procedure B, and someone updates procedure B so that step 4 is now step 5.
Oh, the reference in procedure A is broken.
Exactly. It's pointing to the wrong place or to a step that doesn't even exist anymore. And this is silent cross-reference breakage. Nobody notices it happened until an auditor stumbles across it months later.
Right.
And second, you have the reality of how human beings actually absorb information. Like, nobody reads a 300-page narrative quality manual to figure out how to do their daily tasks.
No, of course not. They learn by shadowing, by tribal knowledge, you know, by just asking the person standing next to them.
Yeah. The manual exists almost entirely for the certification body, not for the operations team. It's literally documentation for documentation's sake.
So if Word documents in SharePoint are fundamentally broken for managing complex operations, what is the alternative? Like, how do we build a bridge between the rules on the server and the actual reality on the floor?
We stop treating business operations like a creative writing exercise, and we start treating them like software infrastructure. I mean, software engineering solved this exact problem of managing extreme complexity years ago.
How so?
When developers build massive interconnected systems, they don't write a Word document describing how the code should work and check it once a year. They use Git.
Git, okay.
Yeah, Git is a version control system that tracks every single text change made to a file. It makes your operations diffable.
Diffable, meaning?
Meaning if you change a temperature setting in a process, you can look at the screen and see the exact difference between the old version and the new version highlighted in red and green. Every change is tracked, timestamped, and attached to the person who made it.
Wow.
And crucially, they don't use Word documents. They use machine-readable files, specifically YAML files.
Okay, let's define YAML for a second, just so we're all on the same page. It's essentially just a way of formatting text using simple key-value pairs and indentations, right? So that both a human can read it easily and a computer program can parse it automatically.
That's the perfect way to describe it. And because your operational specifications are now formatted as structured data in these YAML files, you can run them through a CI/CD pipeline.
which stands for Continuous Integration and Continuous Deployment.
Right. In a business operations context, it means that every time a manager or an engineer commits a change to a procedure, the pipeline automatically runs a suite of automated checks. The computer reads the YAML file and asks, did this change break a cross-reference?
Oh, nice.
Does this new step violate a safety constraint coded somewhere else in the system? Does it still align with the required customer experience target?
So the validation happens instantly.
Instantly. Broken links and logical conflicts are caught in seconds, blocked from being deployed, and flagged to the user immediately.
So instead of a binder full of narratives, your QMS becomes a repository of structured data that basically tests itself. It takes the anxiety out of the audit entirely because the audit is effectively happening automatically every time you hit save.
Exactly.
Certify a commit, not a calendar date.
Yes. Certify a commit, not a calendar date. It transforms compliance from a periodic historical review where you're trying to prove you are compliant at a specific moment in the past into a continuous real-time guarantee.
Wait, if we can't write it all down, shouldn't we just give up on standardizing complex operations entirely? Or, I guess on the flip side, if the problem is that our current manuals aren't detailed enough to prevent errors, shouldn't we just hire a whole team of technical writers to capture every single edge case and cram that into the YAML files?
Well, what's fascinating here is that the sources provide an actual mathematical proof that writing it all down is not just practically difficult, it is geometrically impossible. This brings us to the R5 specification impossibility theorem.
The math wall. I really want to spend some time here because this entirely undercuts the traditional philosophy of quality management, which, you know, usually assumes that if something went wrong, you just didn't write a detailed enough procedure.
Right, it's always a blame game. But the R5 theorem removes the guilt from quality managers. It models an organization's operational space using 48 dimensions.
Okay, 48 dimensions.
Yeah, think of a dimension as any variable that can change in an operation. Dimension 1 might be the ambient temperature of the room. Dimension 2 is the specific model of the espresso grinder.
Oh, I see.
Dimension 3 is the skill level of the operator. Dimension 4 is the humidity, and so on, all the way up to 48. Now, if you assume a very modest resolution, say just a 10-point scale or a 10% increment for each of those 48 dimensions, the number of distinguishable configurations in that operational space is 10 to the 48th power.
10 to the 48th power. Yeah. Okay, to put that into perspective for you listening, the number of atoms in the entire observable universe is roughly 10 to the 80th. So 10 to the 48th is a number so staggeringly huge that it just breaks human comprehension.
Completely breaks it.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you had a digital library of 10 quintillion standard operating procedures, which is only 10 to the 20th, you would still only cover an infinitesimally small fraction of the possible situations an organization might face on any given Tuesday.
Wow.
You cannot write enough SOPs to cover every situation. It is geometric boundary. It's not a lack of effort. Your QMS isn't failing because your team is lazy or your technical writers aren't thorough enough. It's failing because exhaustively specifying human operations in narrative form is mathematically impossible.
Okay, so if we accept that we cannot mathematically write down exactly how to handle every situation, what is the alternative? I mean, we can't just throw up our hands and say, do whatever feels right. We still need quality control. We still need consistency for the customer.
Right, exactly. And because exhaustive documentation is impossible, you need tests, not documentation. This is where organizational schema theory, or OST, introduces a critical architectural separation. It divides your operational specifications into two distinct categories, contracts and procedures.
Okay, let's break those down. What is a contract in the OST framework? Because we aren't talking about lawyers and signatures here, right?
No, no lawyers. In the OST cascade, contracts sit at the top, specifically levels 0, 1, and 2. A contract defines what must be achieved. It is a testable requirement with strict pass-fail criteria. And crucially, these contracts are executor invariant.
Executor invariant, meaning the contract does not care who or what is doing the physical work.
Exactly. If the level 2 process contract dictates that a shot of espresso must be extracted in exactly 25 to 30 seconds at a water temperature of 94 degrees Celsius, that is the test. It does not matter if that espresso is being made by a human barista with 10 years of experience, a robotic arm, or like a fully automated AI-driven kiosk.
Right.
The contract holds. It defines the invariant pass-fail criteria for the outcome.
Wait, I'm genuinely confused here, though. I get how you can write automated code to test software, but how does a CI/CD pipeline test a human barista tamping espresso? The computer isn't watching them work on the floor.
That is the most common point of confusion when bridging software engineering with physical operations. The CI/CD pipeline is not testing the physical act of the barista making the coffee in real time.
Oh.
The pipeline is testing the logic of the organizational specifications. It tests whether the procedure the barista is instructed to use is properly linked to an outcome contract that is being measured. Let me explain the second half of the framework or procedures.
Go for it.
Procedures live at levels 3, 4, and 5 of the OST cascade. While contracts define what must be achieved, procedures define how to achieve it.
So procedures are the actual steps the human or the machine takes.
Yes. And unlike contracts, procedures are highly local, highly adaptable, and entirely dependent on the executor.
Makes sense.
A human barista's procedure for hitting that 25 to 30 second extraction contract involves adjusting the grind size by feel and tamping the coffee grounds with a specific physical pressure. An automated machine's procedure to hit the exact same contract involves completely different mechanical steps.
Right, because it's a machine.
Exactly. The pipeline tests the structural integrity of these rules. If a manager submits a change to the barista's tamping procedure in the YAML file, the pipeline automatically checks if that new procedure still logically aligns with a required 25 to 30 second extraction contract in the system architecture. It validates the organizational code.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because if you are a quality professional listening to this, you might be having a mild panic attack right now. You might be thinking, I have an ISO 9001 certification to maintain. I can't just throw away my QMS and replace it with a GitHub repository of software tests. My auditor will fail me.
Oh, I'm sure they're sweating.
Right. But the beauty of the OST framework is that this entirely new paradigm maps perfectly onto the existing ISO 9001 standard. You aren't burning your QMS down, you are restructuring it to actually function.
That is the most powerful practical application of the research in these preprints. The OST cascade is not a replacement for ISO 9001, it is a formalization of it into machine-readable logic. Let's look at the actual text of the standard.
Okay.
ISO 9001 Clause 8 is focused on operations. It requires an organization to have documented processes for its operational activities. In the OST world, that maps directly to the L3 through L5 cascade. Your process specifications, your procedure definitions, your input and sourcing requirements, all the how.
Okay, let me make sure I'm visualizing this right. The bottom half of the cascade, the how, the adaptable procedures the barista uses, is satisfying Clause 8. And then we have ISO 9001 Clause 9, which is performance evaluation. It requires monitoring, measurement, and analysis of those processes. So where does that sit?
In OST, Clause 9 maps perfectly to the L0 through L2 contracts at the top of the cascade.
Yeah.
The contracts are the performance evaluation criteria. They define the measurement targets at every single level.
Oh, wow.
The standard has always asked for operations and evaluations. OST just separates them cleanly into how and what and formats them so a computer can read them.
So imagine a traceability diagram. At the top, there's a customer perception target L0 stated in plain customer language. Espresso balanced and not bitter. Below it, cascading downward through L1 to L4, each level shows a quality gate that traces upward back to that L0 target. At each level, the gate isn't a document, it's shown as a pass-fail test. At the bottom, you see the ISO clause mapping. L3, L5 gates map to Clause 8 for operations, and L0, L2 contracts map to Clause 9 for performance evaluation. The entire cascade is sitting inside a CI/CD pipeline where OLD commits trigger validation and failures block deployment.
This is how ISO 9001 should have worked from the beginning. It takes the intent of the standard, which is to ensure consistent quality, and gives it an architecture that can actually survive the complexity of the real world. You have a version-controlled, continuously validated system where your documentation and your operations are the exact same thing.
Okay, so we have this beautiful, automated, test-driven cascade. We've separated the what from the how, but that begs a massive question about the tests themselves. What are these quality gates actually testing? Where do the pass-fail metrics come from? Because, I mean, you could build a perfectly automated CI/CD pipeline that flawlessly tests for things that do not matter to the business at all.
That happens all the time. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this is where traditional quality management systems often lose their way entirely. Traditional QMS quality gates are almost always based on internal efficiency metrics.
Like what?
Things like defect rates, throughput, cycle times, or machine uptime. They're inward looking. OST fundamentally inverts this. OST requires backward traceability. Every single quality gate, no matter how deep in the operational weeds it is, must trace all the way up to a customer experience target at L0.
So it's entirely outward looking. We are engineering the entire business backward from the customer's brain.
Yes. Let's walk through the SpectraCoffee example from the source materials to see how this actually works in the code. SpectraCoffee is a fully specified open source demonstration of the OST system. Let's say you are an engineer looking at a level 4 operational task, a very specific input specification. It says the water temperature for extraction must be exactly 94 degrees Celsius. In a traditional QMS, that number is just a rule typed into a binder. If a new barista asks why it's 94 degrees and not 92 degrees, the answer is usually because the manual says so, or because that's what the equipment manufacturer recommended.
Right, there's no visible logic connecting that temperature to a business outcome.
Exactly. But in OST, that L4 temperature specification has a machine-readable link that traces upward. In the YAML file for that L4 step, there is literally a line of code that says parent, L3 espresso procedure.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that traces up to an L3 procedure about how the barista operates the machine. That L3 file has a tag pointing to an L2 process contract defining the chemical extraction parameters. That traces up to an L1 service delivery requirement about the aroma and flavor profile, and that traces directly to the ultimate L0 target, the customer perception target, which states that the espresso must be perceived by the customer as balanced and not bitter.
So the 94 degree temperature specification doesn't exist to satisfy an engineer's preference, and it doesn't exist to give an auditor something to check off a list. It exists only because of that customer perception target at L0.
Precisely.
If 94 degrees didn't reliably produce a balanced and not bitter perception in the customer's mind, the specification would be fundamentally wrong, no matter what the manual said.
This is the critical difference between quality management as internal compliance and quality management as customer experience engineering. The CI/CD pipeline enforces this structural integrity. If you try to delete or alter a parent contract at L2, the system throws an error because the L3 and L4 procedures below it are suddenly orphaned.
That makes total sense.
The test suite ensures that every action taken on the floor has a direct, verifiable link to a positive customer outcome.
So, what does this all mean for you, the listener? Why should you care about backward traceability in a YAML file?
I think it comes down to the ruthless elimination of waste. In lean manufacturing, there is a heavy focus on muta, which is waste. But usually we are trained to look for physical waste or wasted time on a factory floor. OSD introduces the concept of coordination waste or specification waste.
And it's a profound realization when you audit a traditional company using this backward traceability framework. When you force a company to map their existing SOPs to an OST cascade, you inevitably find dozens, sometimes hundreds, of procedures that cannot be traced upward to an L0 customer experience target.
Just floating rules.
Exactly. You find mid-level managers running weekly reports that no one reads. You find complex cleaning protocols for backroom areas that have absolute zero impact on safety or customer perception. You find convoluted internal sign-off loops that exist only because someone 10 years ago made a mistake and the company added a permanent layer of bureaucracy to prevent it from happening again. And because it's locked into the traditional QMS, everyone just keeps doing it year after year, blindly feeding the bureaucracy. But when you apply OST, those disconnected procedures light up. The CI/CD pipeline flags them instantly. Warning. This process has no upward justification.
Yeah.
It's like having a spell checker for your entire business, but instead of looking for typos, it checks if a new rule accidentally ruins the customer's experience or if an old rule is just wasting everyone's time.
Any procedure that cannot be traced to a customer-facing contract at L0 is a procedure without a quality basis.
Mm-mm.
It is documentation for documentation's sake. It consumes resources, it burns out your employees with pointless busy work, and it does absolutely nothing to improve quality outcomes for the customer.
It's just drag.
Complete drag. OSD allows you to systematically detect and delete that waste through code. It shifts the culture of quality from following the rules blindly to passing the tests that deliver actual value. You are telling the executor what must be achieved and exactly why it matters to the customer, and you are giving them the adaptable freedom to execute the how.
To bring this all together, what we are really talking about is moving from documenting the past to engineering the future. We are leaving behind the fragile, static Word documents and the panic of the annual audit. By utilizing version-controlled, continuously validated specifications, we acknowledge the mathematical impossibility of writing down every edge case. We separate the invariant what from the adaptable how, mapping perfectly to ISO 9001 clauses 8 and 9, and ensuring that every single action in the business traces backward to the customer's perception.
It's a complete rewire of how we think about managing work.
Episode EOST1 is the practitioner overview for operations leaders broader than quality management, but directly related. And if the SBT side of this interests you, how customer perception targets at L0 are actually measured, Episode 4 covers the intersection of SBT and OST directly. Until then, keep questioning the systems around you, and thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
If your business operations are entirely defined by machine-readable contracts that trace directly to customer perception, and the how is left to adaptable procedures, what happens to the traditional role of middle management? Are they still supervisors of people, or do they become chief specification officers whose only job is to debug the organizational code?